For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
All right, in any case, let's learn Maharal first. So this week we'll discuss one of the more perplexing phrases or statements that Avraham makes. Towards the beginning of the parsha, the Avraham and Sarah get to Eretz Yisrael for the first time, and as soon as they get there, the Torah tells us as they ra'av ba'aretz, a famine hits the land, and just as they're beginning to unpack their bags and settling in, they're forced to go down to Mitzrayim. The Torah tells us on their way down, Avram takes a look at his wife and says, "Hineinu yadati ki isho yifas mare'at." I see you're a beautiful woman. And Rashi explains whether or not he actually first noticed it at that time because of the tznias that existed between them, or whether or not he's simply saying, "Now I have to be concerned." Be it as it may, we're on our way down. He says to his wife, "We have a problem. You're beautiful. Ki yiru osocha mitzrim, when the Egyptians see you, ve'omru ishtozos, and they realize that we're married, hargu osiva osach yichayu, they're going to knock me off, I'm going to be killed, and they're going to take you. So we need a plan in order to survive this." So he comes up with a plan. The plan itself would make perfect sense except for one small phrase in his plan. Pasuk Yud Gimel, the part that's underlined, Imri na achosiat. So say, please tell everybody that you are my sister, V'chayso nafshi v'glalech, and I will then be able to live on account of you. Because if I'm your wife, if you're my wife and I'm your husband, they're going to kill me. But if you'll just say that you're my sister and I'll say that I'm your brother, then everything will be good. That would be a brilliant plan. Works perfectly. He avoids the problem of the marriage. It will be brother and sister and everything will be good. Problem is, if you were actually reading it inside with me, I skipped a phrase. Because what he says in full is, say that you are my sister, l'man yitavli ba'avurech, in order that they should do good for me, that it should be good for me on your behalf, v'chayso nafshi b'glach, and I'll live. That phrase is troubling. In order that it should be good for me, l'man yitavli ba'avurech, they should do good for me on account of you. Rashi says, underlined, yitnu li matanos. They'll give me gifts. So that what Avram is saying is, we got a problem here. You're beautiful. I'm married to you. They're going to kill me. Let's say that you're my sister. That way I'll get gifts and I'll be able to live. That's troubling. Why add that? What does it mean? This is Avram we're talking about. I don't know, write down. The fear we understand. The plan we understand. But he adds, as Rashi explains, yitnu li matanos, they'll give me gifts when you say that we're brother and sister.
And why doesn't he express more concern for her?
Right, there's no concern for, well, correct, there's no concern for her. We'll discuss that, excellent.
On her own.
Right, I'm afraid I'm going to die, but you know what, I might even get some gifts out of this. So let's come up with a plan that not only saves my life, but I benefit from. Just seems very strange. The Maharal asks this question and is going to give us a brilliant approach, a novel approach, which has fantastic ramifications for us in our daily life. Let's take a look at how the Maharal addresses this problem. He's going to ask two questions. One is going to be our appetizer question, and then he's going to get to our meat and potatoes. The appetizer question that he asks on the left-hand side of the page is as follows, the part that's underlined on the right-hand column of the left-hand side of the page. V'im Toymar asks the Maharal, V'Avraham loma kibel matanos. How could Avram accept gifts? So before he gets to our meat and potato question, which we already started asking, he asks, how could Avram accept gifts? Let's forget about why he would say this. Would Avram really accept these gifts from the Egyptians? Halok siv, the Pasuk in Mishlei tells us, sone matanos yichya. One who hates, despises gifts will live. Meaning chayim, true life, chiyus, comes from being self-sufficient. From within oneself, which is the closest to Hashem that we can come, just like the Ribbono Shel Olam does not need anything else from the outside. So when we are self-sufficient, so we are most God-like, and the way that Shlomo HaMelech describes that in Sefer Mishlei is, Sone Matanos Yichye, one who hates gifts. We like freebies. We're not talking about gifts from a spouse. We're talking about
wanting to get things for free. Shlomo says, hate that. Be a sone of matanos. You want to earn things. You want it to be yours. You want it to be deserved. Asks the Maharal. So Avram is looking for gifts. He's going out of his way to create a scenario where he gets gifts. That's not the way that we act. It's not the way that we behave. Furthermore, he asks, this is all still part of our appetizer question. Avram Asmo Amar, later on in this very same parsha, Avram is going to go to war with the four kings and the five kings to try to rescue his nephew Lot. And after he's victorious, the king of Sodom comes out and says to Avram, you've been amazing, let me bestow gifts upon you, riches to thank you for what you've done. And Avram responds and says, no, thank you. And he uses a language, says the Maral, im michut v'atzroch na'al, from the Pasuk, I don't even want a shoestring from you, lest anyone say that you caused Avram to become rich. That's what I don't understand. He fights a war of four kings and five kings. He puts forth all of this effort. He risks his life, and he says, no payment. And now he's on his way down to Mitzrayim, and he says, you know, I'm a fan, I'm going to be killed. But let's come up with a plan, and you know what, maybe I'll even get something out of it. He'll give me gifts. Asks Maral, why would he take them? He didn't take it from Sodom. Shlomo Melech told us not to take gifts. Why would Avram take these gifts? Says Maral to this first part, Mia Kushi Azos Yesh L'Tarit, bottom line and top of the next column. This problem we can deal with as follows, as I'm going to explain later. De'einza b'chlal v'avar checha. V'avar checha. Hashem promises Avram, in the beginning of this parasha, I'm going to bless you and I'm going to make you wealthy. Who is going to do it? I'm going to do it, says Hashem. I'm going to bless you like in a way that you've never imagined. So Avram said, when the king of Sodom came out and said, I want to give you riches, I don't want it from you. From you, I'm not taking riches. I'm taking riches only because Hashem promised me riches. And since you want to give it because I saved you, it's a payment for something. As a payment, I don't need your payments. I'm not afraid of not having money. So your payments I don't want. But here, says Maral, Kan shenoson lo paro midaito lechvodo, where Paro in Mitzrayim would give him gifts on his own in honor of Avraham, as a kavod to Avraham, that, says the Maral, is within the klal of Va'avar Cheka. That fits. Hashem promised I'm going to give you riches. Here's how he's doing it. That people want to bestow gifts upon me, that's a fulfillment of the bracha of Va'avar Cheka. I'll bless you. Look, the nations are wanting to be part of this. If it's a payment for something that you did, says the Maral, I don't want it. I don't want your payment. Hashem is going to make me rich. Here, where I'm just walking through town and people are throwing wealth at me because, in my honor, that's what they're doing, I'll accept that. That's not sone matonos yichya. That's not hating gifts, because you're doing it in order to honor me, and Hashem promised that's what's going to happen, so I'll take it. Okay, be that as it may, that's their appetizer. The Maral explains, so it's okay for Avram to accept gifts because it's part of his kavod, it's part of the blessing, the fulfillment of the bracha that he's going to get, he'll take them. But that leaves us with the meat and potatoes question. All right, he'll take them. How could he, why is he asking for them? What does he mean when he says to his wife Sarah, say that you are my sister so that I can get gifts? To that, the Maral says as follows. His question is in the second underline. We'll read it inside. Vote Kasha Sha'omar Li'ishto Sha'toymer Achihu, that he wants his wife to say, yeah, this guy's my brother. How could he do that? So the Maral explains as follows. Let me start outside and we'll read it inside. There were two categories of people that Avram had to be concerned with. You have the upper class of Mitzrayim, the Chashuvim, the nobility. And you have the lower class, the dregs of society, the neighborhoods that no one would ever want to walk through. And each one presented its own challenge. As Avram sees, I'm going to be walking through town, and I have this most beautiful woman by my side. How are they going to respond? His real concern was the lower class. The lower class, when they were just going to, they're going to see this beautiful woman next to this guy, they're going to knock him off and take her. That's where he was afraid of his life. The upper class, says the Maral, the upper class doesn't behave that way. Upper classmen, nobility, they don't kill a person in order to take his wife. What they're going to do is something else. He was afraid they would want her, but would address it differently. So to address this whole scenario, the Maral suggests Avram came up with the following plan. I want you to say, you're my sister.
when you say you are my sister, the nobility will then try to win your hand in marriage. How does nobility win the hand of a beautiful woman in marriage when her guarantor, so to speak, is her brother? What do they do?
You bring gifts.
You bring gifts. You try to prove I'm the most noble. I'm the wealthiest. I'm the most suitable for her. That's how the upper class is going to react. They're going to see a beautiful woman. They're going to want to marry her. They're not going to come in and try to beat up her brother. That's not how nobility. They're going to try to prove how noble they are. So if you say that you're my sister, all the nobility will come out and try to win your hand in marriage. What does the lower class do when they see how the upper class is treating Avraham? How they're coming out and they see how significant he is? Says the Maral, now they see he's a chashuv.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody of significance. They will respond to me differently when they see I'm somebody of stature than if they think I'm just a guy traveling through town. Let's read it inside and we'll put that together and then all the ramifications that come with that. Says the Maral right after the underlines. Venira. Sha'avram hayom yisyore, he was afraid, ki pritzei hador, the lower class, the dregs of society, yahargu oso al dvar ishto. He was afraid they were going to kill him. That's what they do. You walk through bad neighborhoods, why do we avoid bad neighborhoods? Because bad things happen in bad neighborhoods. So Avram was afraid of them. Ki yofahi, she's a beautiful woman. Lekach omrar imrili achosia. Therefore he says, you know, I need you to say that you're my sister. Now what happens when you say you're my sister? The upper class of society, the chashuvim, they're not going to take you against your will or against my will. That's not how a person of chashivos, an upperclassman, nobility, they don't act that way. The chashuvim adra, but just the opposite. They will yichabdu, see, they will give honor to me. Shekol echad ve'echad yachshav, each one will think she'eteno sochlo, that I'll give you to them, le'isha, as a wife. U'bishvil zeh, now that you said you're my sister, now that the upper class nobility will come out and try to win your hand by giving me gifts, ehayechoshav gam kei neged ha'pritzim, I will be considered important in the eyes of the lower class. Kishayiru, when they see Shagdolim v'hasarim yechabdu osi v'shvil sara, when they see how much honor I'm given, v'lo ya'asu ra'ali, and then they won't harm me. Ki ein derech lasos ra l'chashuf, because a person doesn't do something bad to a person who's significant. So the Rambam, the Maral, gets and says Avram got into the head of what's going to happen to the heads of the local Egyptian population. If I'm a guy walking through town and they see me, they're going to just want to kill me and take you. But if they know that I'm a person of significance, there's going to be an investigation, people are going to notice that something happened to me, there's going to be people, reporters, people are going to be asking around. You don't start up with somebody who's a chashuv. It's not worth it. You change the way that you respond when you know that the person is a person of stature. If it's a nobody, I'll do something to him. If he's a stature, says Avram to himself, how do I create myself into a person of stature in front of these people? I am a person of stature. I'm walking through town. How do I make them know not to start up with me? Well, if you start pretending and acting like we're brother and sister, well, then all the nobility will come and give me honor. If they give me honor, everybody will see that I'm something of chashivus, and they'll stay away. Maral says, in his next line, we respond differently to the way that we think the person with whom we're dealing with, how we view them. In the same way as Avram is trying to create himself as a person of stature, because then he knows that the lower class of society will treat him differently, that's a reality. We respond, we relate to our environment, we relate to other people, and the way we think they are, the stature we give them, changes the way we treat them. So the Maral brings an interesting proof to this. He says there's a Gemara, we can create this ourselves. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Today we live in America, things are very relatively safe for, you know, anyone walking most streets of the country. Obviously there are certain areas we would stay away from. But generally it's a safe place. If you walk into a local barbershop to get a haircut, no one's really afraid anything's going to happen to you. It's not a dangerous place. That was not always true in Jewish history. And in the times of the Mishnah, it was actually, during many areas in which the Jews lived, physically dangerous to get a haircut from a non-Jew. Because you had your back turned to him, and he's got weapons in his hands, scissors and razors, and whoops, I slipped. And before you knew it, there was some serious damage was done. And so there are actually Mishnayos, which discuss in Maseches Avodah Zarah, a prohibition to get a haircut from a non-Jew in a public, in a private place, that you have to be in a public area because it was dangerous to do so. So there's a Mishnah which discusses the prohibition that the sages enacted about getting haircuts from non-Jews in private areas because of the danger that it created for the Jew. The Mishnah, the Gemara discusses, what does a Jew do who ends up in a scenario, it just he didn't realize, whatever, he's now in a secluded area getting a haircut from a non-Jew and he's afraid for his life. What should he do?
Grab a scissor.
So he could do that. Mishnah says as follows. Grab a mirror. Look in the mirror, says the Gemara. Rashi explains, not to keep an eye on him, because, all right, you can keep an eye on him while he slits your throat, that's not going to help you much. Look in the mirror as if you are a choshev who is particular about the way you get your haircut. Because in those days, apparently, most of them, yeah, whatever, haircut like this, haircut like that, you didn't care. Men weren't accustomed to look in the mirror. Some of the Mefarshim actually learned from here that it's forbidden for a man to look in a mirror, that the Gemara is only permitting a man to look in a mirror because it's a womanly thing to do under this circumstance of danger. Not everybody learns that way. Most learn, like Rashi says, that you look at it in a specific way. You know those people when you get a haircut and they're like, they drive you crazy. No, can you take just a little bit? You missed a little bit over here. Can you take an eighth of an inch more over here? Right, they're just over and over and over and over again. So it probably doesn't drive you as crazy as it does the men who are like, please, give me a break. Can we just move on? But there's a certain... So Rashi says, take a mirror and do that. Because the non-Jew giving your haircut will see... Oh, this is that kind of person. This must be a person of stature. I slit this guy's throat, somebody's going to notice. And I will therefore treat him differently. So you want to protect yourself, says the Gemara? You realize you're stuck, what do I do? Just grab a mirror. Start paying attention to what he's doing, because if you treat yourself like you're one of those people who is so chashuv, so significant, of such stature, that it matters what your hair looks like, that will serve as protection, because the guy will now treat you differently because he sees who he's dealing with. Says, well, that's what Avram's doing. I need gifts. Not because I need gifts. Because I need to live. How am I going to live? How am I going to survive the lower class? When you're my sister, the upper class will give me gifts. When the upper class gives me gifts, they'll show the lower class what kind of person I am. Then they'll treat me differently and I will be safe. So says the Maral. The Sefer HaChinuch, when he goes through the mitzvahs of the Torah, giving reasons and explanations for the different mitzvahs. So the Karan Pesach, which is one of the earlier mitzvahs in Sefer Shmos, in the entire count of the mitzvahs, it's the right towards the beginning. So there are 14, 15 different mitzvahs regarding the Karan Pesach. Very unique mitzvahs regarding the Karan Pesach. You have to specifically roast the karban. You can't cook it in a water base. It has to be fully cooked. It can't be half roasted when you eat it. You're not allowed to take it from one home to another home. You're not allowed to have any leftovers. You're not allowed to break any bones while you're eating it. Lots of specific halachas of the Karban Pesach. The Sefer HaChinuch suggests the reason for that is that on this night of the Leil Seder, we became B'nai Chorin. Become free, and we become B'nai Malachim. Children of kings. Kings eat their food differently than everybody else. Kings always have roasted meat. Roasted meat is a higher quality than cooked meat. They roast their meat. So on this night, you can only have your Karban Pesach roasted. They never eat raw. It's fully cooked. They're not in a rush. When you eat half-cooked meat, you're busy flying it. That's not how kings eat. It's fully cooked. Leftovers? Leftovers in the palace? There are no leftovers ever served in the palace. Who breaks bones when they eat? Says the Sefer HaChinuch, a person who's ravenous, who's starving, who's just digging in and plowing into his food. If you have to eat and you're not allowed to break a bone, so you're going to eat in a very particular manner. That's how kings eat. And taking food from one place to another, these potluck lunches, joint, not palace. So says the Sefer HaChinuch, all of the laws of the Karban Pesach establish your behavior like a king. Because if you want to be like a king and be treated like a king and present yourself to the world like a king, you act like a king. So therefore, the mitzvah of how you eat the Karban Pesach is you act like a king tonight. Because how else do we feel like kings if we're not acting like kings? And when we feel like kings and we act like kings, then we'll be treated like kings. And so it's all part of that equation of how to create an aura as to who we as the Jewish people really are. This concept is a reality. We respond to different people based on the way that they're presenting to us who they think they are. Just as a simple example, if you're walking out of Turner Field, you took family to a baseball game, you're on the way out, and as you're walking through the back of the stadium to get to your car, you reach into your car for your keys and a tissue falls out. You look, it falls on the floor, and the floor is littered with cups and sunflower seeds and all the napkins. It's disgusting, the floor. You can almost barely see the cement and the concrete amongst all of the debris that's there. Do you reach down and pick up your tissue that fell out of your pocket? Now, would you throw it on the floor on purpose? No, probably not. But it fell. In the midst of all that, do you reach down and pick it up? I don't know. You could say yes, you could say no. I imagine most people would not. They wouldn't throw it there, but it's disgusting. It's a mess. What difference does it make?
Well, did the kids see?
Right, so that would be what's going through your head. In other words, if you're on your own, the place is disgusting. You walk into a museum, the floor is a mess. It's shot. You could see your reflection off of the floor of the museum. You reach into your pocket to get a tissue, pull out your phone, and a tissue falls out. You pick it up?
Yeah.
You better believe you're going to pick it up. What's the difference? There's obvious the differences. This environment is pristine. In an environment that screams at me, I am pristine, I am honored, you will treat it that way. I would not dare leave a tissue on the floor with my kids, without my kids, in that environment. When the environment screams to me, I'm a mess, I'm disheveled, I'm disgusting anyway, so then I'll relate to it that way. Why should I treat it any different than it's treating itself? I might have created whatever, whoever created the environment says this is what I am. Rav Volba writes in his Ali Shur that everything in the world has a value. Everything in the world you can put a value to. How much is this cup worth? How much is this tape recorder? How much is the table, the chair? Everything has a value. How much is it worth? But that's only true in Gashmius, in physical, tangible things. What about Ruchnius, spirituality? How do we put a value on something? What's its value?
In relation to other things.
So he writes, how much cover you give it? How much honor? How much does it demand? How much do you give it? That tells you its value. When you see something and you give it kavod, now I know how much you value it, and depending on how much kavod it demands, then that's the dollar sign. In the physical world, we could put a dollar sign on something. How much will you pay for this? And in the world of ruchnius, it's how much kavod do you give it tells me how much you value it, and how much kavod does it demand tells me how valuable it is. And it's not because when a person demands or something demands kavod, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's standing there saying, you will honor me. It's people sometimes just exude, like, that's a person who deserves kavod. You just see it in them. And we then treat it that way. Just like Avram understood that the lower class of society would see him, they would respond to him based on what they thought he was. So we do the same thing also. And the way we present ourselves to the world around us also affects the way the world around us treats us. Whether or not they treat our home that way, whether or not they treat us, how they treat we dictate very often how we're presenting. And whether or not we're chashuvim, and when we're chashuvim, so then people respond to it that way. And there are things that we can do that tell people that we're not so chashuv, that we don't really care. We're not so particular about certain things. And then people respond in kind. And believe me, I'm not saying that every time that means you walk out of your house that you have to get yourself dressed up to the nines and your house has to be immaculate. I'm not saying that. But there is a reality that the way that our houses run, the way that we present ourselves, impacts, in a way, the way that people respond to us. And that's a reality, says the Maharal. It's such a reality. Avram says, I need you to say, you're my sister, and get me gifts. Not because I need gifts. Because when the upper class give me gifts, the lower class won't kill me. They'll see, oh, that's a person of stature. That's a person who's chashuv. Person who's chashuv you don't start up with. So therefore I need gifts to be able to present myself one way. And that's the reality, that in the same way as if you can do something to get gifts, you're presented in one way. We can do lots of things that cause ourselves to be presented in a certain way, and there's a reality that others around us respond to the way that we present, and that's the reality of human nature. We respond and react to that. So says Morel, in any case, explaining this very enigmatic phrase that Avram demands gifts, but it's really only in order to live. From the gifts from the upper class to be able to live and survive from the lower class. Okay, that's part one, as far as our Maharal goes.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.